You kick up the leaves and the magic is lost. A town where your blue skies fade to gray. A town where your passion's gone away. And I don't need no care or none. You stand in the line just to hit a new love.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. Andy and George, Sunday afternoon, I guess where you are. How are you both?
The sky's a lot brighter than I am.
Well, it's raining here.
Lovely.
Do you think we can go through a whole Talking the Blues without actually talking about the blues?
It's tempting, isn't it, after yesterday?
George, tell me which is your favourite book.
The
joke being that we weren't going to talk about the blues, but we are.
Right.
Fairly sobering, wasn't it, Andy?
Yes, it was, really. I was expecting a lot more from Everton yesterday. Last home game before Christmas, thanks to the World Cup. We don't play at Goodison again till Boxing Day when Wolves rock up. I thought we would have got much more of a performance and a show from the team than we got. I have to give credit to Leicester, who set their stall out right from the kickoff. We barely laid a finger on them in midfield. They dominated the game, scored two good goals, albeit both late in each half, but it doesn't matter when they come, as long as they come. I think they gave us a bit. I think they gave Everton a bit of a lesson in football yesterday, if I'm brutally honest. We were second best all over the park. Far too many players underperformed. Players let other players down. There was two players in particular I felt sorry for. One was Alex Iwobi, who kept working and trying to make things happen. And the other was Vitaly Mykolenko, who I thought, again, played solidly at left back. And in answer to the, in inverted commas, criticism he gets from certain sections of the fan base that he doesn't attack enough, he made a valiant effort yesterday to get forward as often as he could and overlap and provide some width and hopefully an opportunity to cross. And invariably, the man in front of him, Demarai Gray, chose to ignore him. And I think if I'd have been Vitaly Mykolenko, I'd have been having serious words with Demarai Gray back in the locker room to say, what is the point in me providing you an outlet if you are constantly going to ignore me? I felt really, really sorry for Mykolenko yesterday. I thought Demarai Gray was average at best yesterday. It annoyed me. And I found myself really quite angry come the end of the game at what I'd seen. I don't think we played very well in all areas. We barely laid a tackle on Leicester at all throughout the game. Maddison, Tielemans, Dewsbury Hall, Harvey Barnes. They had the free run of Goodison Park yesterday and filled the boots. And in all honesty, I was a bit surprised that it was only 2-0. Because I thought they played some good football. It was fast. It was incisive. They moved the ball well, retained possession. I was a bit surprised it took them as long as it did to finally score. And I guess that's partially down to the fact that our defence is more solid than it has been. But crikey, it's having to be because we're conceding so many shots to the opposition. If our defence was as bad as it had been last season, holy smoke, I dread to think what the scoreline could have been in some of these recent games. So, you know, a little bit of credit to the defence for keeping it as tight as they did, but the midfield was poor. I thought Amadou Onana had probably his least effective game. In fact, he was largely anonymous in midfield. McNeil tried hard but didn't get anywhere. We just never laid a finger on them in midfield. You know, Garner Gay was disappointing, and then obviously left the game at half time to give James Garner the second half. But again, Garner didn't look to have. Didn't look to have a tackle in him either, which just allowed Leicester to continue what they were doing. And obviously, having got the one goal lead, you know, they were then able to play the in the second half exactly how they won the title a few years ago, by playing counter attacking football. And they were very good at it, as the second goal proved. So, all in all, extremely disappointing. And it just made me think, about what we kind of mused about last week, of whether Frank Lampard would go with two up front, and we didn't. I was disappointed with DCL. I thought his contribution was poor. I'm probably being overly hard on the boy. I don't think he's 100% fit. I really don't. But the first challenge with Feist, the long-haired centre half at Leicester, and I just thought, I just got the impression that he didn't fancy it after that. And that was no surprise to me that at some point DCL left the game, and he eventually did. Overall, very, very disappointing. And I guess there has to be questions, not only of the squad, but of Frank Lampard over his selection and his tactics through the game, because absolutely nothing went right.
I think all of that's fair, Andy, and we'll get into it in greater detail. I think with Onana, it's after the game, I think we discovered that he had an ankle injury in training before the game. So I think on Friday, he sprained his ankle. So, but then if you're not fit to play, you're not fit to play, and you shouldn't be on the pitch, should you? So, you know.
Exactly. I didn't know that. So my immediate question is, if he sprained an ankle, why on earth are they risking him? Because it only needs one bad tackle, and it's a broken ankle, and he's out for 6 weeks. What's going on? I'm sorry, that's ridiculous.
I think the
player will probably say, "I'm okay, I want to play," but you know, medical people have to surely have to have the final say. If he's sprained an ankle in training, there's no way he should have been on the field.
I think it probably, and George, will come to you in a second. Just on this point, though, I think it probably says that, you know, Lampard doesn't really want to look much further than his first 11. You know, Doucouré is now fit, but Doucouré now seems like surplus to requirements. I mean, you know, it was a pretty poor performance when he did come on. But I don't get the feeling that Doucouré thinks that his future is at Everton under Frank Lampard.
Right.
So, you know, he would have been an obvious replacement. And of course, Tom Davies would have been an obvious replacement obvious starter if indeed Onana wasn't 100% match fit. So it sort of suggests to me that maybe Lampard doesn't have enough confidence in the alternatives to have started them. And he must have obviously gone into yesterday's game knowing that it really was quite a critical game for Everton. You know, after not a great performance at Fulham. So, you know, to try and take 3 points into the last remaining game before the World Cup break. George, sorry, we've been talking a bit, but we haven't asked you. What was your view of the game?
Well, you know, here we go. This is the conversation that I think I want to have. He picked he picked the team that he picked, and I think you're right. I think he picked it for that reason. There's no Tom, there's no Decore, fair enough. But I was surprised. If I'd been doing the team talk, I would have said, right, they've got two world-class players. Maddison, I think, should be a shoo-in for England. Why Grealish is getting all the fuss that he gets when Maddison is a better player, more dangerous player, scores more goals, makes more goals. Maddison's class, man. Really classy player. And so, Tielemans, there's nothing you can do about him. He's real genuine world-class. So what is the plan here today? And for me, I think I texted one of you after about 18 seconds and went, for God's sake, nobody's on Maddison. So he bossed the game, had a marvellous afternoon. You know, I hope he gets him a place at the World Cup, if that's what he wants, and I'm sure he does. But if you go, right, Garnagay, sorry, mate, just make sure Maddison has a quiet. Is that a bad thing to do when you're at home? Is that like sending a very, very negative message? Or is it being super realistic, which is what we're all being invited to think about this season? And I am super realistic about this season. If Lampard is still manager and we're 15th, that's as much as I expect for this season. But, you know, how should we play? Because letting him play was a recipe for utter disaster. They had 15 shots on goal in the first half. This is crazy. So he takes Garnagay off, quite right. He was a man was having a mare for one reason or another. And as Andy said, he puts Garner on. Now, Garner's the future because this boy's inventive, clever, and a forward player. But he's not a replacement for Idrissa Garnagay in the middle of a midfield that's being overrun. Tom Davis should have been on with instructions to make sure that was the end of Maddison's contribution to this game. And I don't mean in a foully cheaty way. I mean, you stay so close to him, they can't pass to him. You man mark him. You take him out of the equation. Let's see how they cope without him. Now, maybe Lampard would say to me, yeah, that's a very negative way of going about it. We're playing at Goodison. I want us to be more positive. Well, then he has to send them out with a good deal more vim, energy and something. You know, I mean, we all know what happened yesterday. Within 15 seconds, a better centre forward than that guy Daka they had would have put us 1-0 down.
Yeah.
And we've all played football at a certain level where you go, oh, wow, this lot are like butter, which Leicester then went on to prove with 15 shots, including the goal-scoring shot, in the first half where they just completely did what they want. There was nobody in the Everton team capable of going, that's not happening. That is not happening. And quite, you know, what those lines of communication are, I don't know. But, you know, we were, as a team, a bit toothless yesterday. And my only other observation from the match, which interested me, I thought he was right to pick Coleman. I think Harvey Barnes is a bit of a menace on that wing. And to put the more experienced fullback in against him, I thought was the right thing to do. But what was clear from when he brought Patterson on is that Patterson is the only member of that squad, with the honourable exception of Iwobi, who wants to play the game as fast as it should be played in the Premier League. He's got the ball, he's given it, he's going to look for it. He's playing at a faster rate. How many, many, many times yesterday did we have possession, pass it across the pitch, turn round, square it back, goes back to Pickford, he lamps it, we don't win the second ball, start again. It's just naive. I thought Lampard had a miserable afternoon yesterday. And I worry that his motivational powers, you know, it was obvious that they'd all got a bollocking at half-time. But that burst of energy lasted about 15 minutes, and then Leicester were back in control, and Maddison was off to the races again. It was very depressing to watch.
Yeah. What if any, was the game plan yesterday? Because, you know, like us all, you watch the game, and then you think about it afterwards, and maybe you think about it during the game and what changes you'd like to see. And I'm sort of, 20-odd hours later, nearly 24 hours later, still struggling to think, actually, when they all came out of the dressing room, what the plan was.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out as well. I couldn't figure it out. sat in the stands. Like you say, as our kid said, right from the kickoff, you know, Barnes throws that crossing and Dacca doesn't get a touch on it. And you think, wow. And you're right, it you straight away, you know, they've come with intent. So what are we going to do? And I just couldn't figure out what we were going to do. We did have a couple of chances. Iwobi had the chance and DCL had a chance that he really should have buried. But in all honesty, you know, they were, you know, well, as we know, they were very few and far between the chances that came Everton's way. I just couldn't figure out what was going on, who was in charge and who was directing traffic. It didn't appear to be, and there obviously isn't, if you like, a midfield general in the side. You know, Iwobi does his level best. He's doing more than his level best at the minute to try and get things going, but he cannot do it on his own. He needs support, and frankly, the support yesterday from our midfield was very poor. Yeah.
And then when you bring Garner on, and you have no muscle in the midfield at all. Yeah. And as Paul said, when Doucouré came on, I thought that was a good idea. Great, somebody's going to run around, clatter a few people. But he didn't. He just didn't reach the pace of the game, did he?
No. None of them really reached the pace of the game.
There were moments yesterday when Garner Gay was so poor, I thought, where is Alan?
Yeah.
Because if you're talking about a midfield general, although you know, I think probably very few of us trust Alan's legs. most of the players in the Premiership know that if you bring the ball up to him and push it past him, you're probably going to retain it unless he takes you down.
He's gone, hasn't he? I mean, he's no longer at the club.
No, he's no longer there. He's been sold, hasn't he? But we missed. I mean, our kid's right. That's the kind of presence on the field that we missed yesterday. He was one guy who would say this isn't going to happen, and he would do his level best to stop it happening. But we didn't have a presence there. We didn't have, well, in very short term, we didn't have anyone who could make a tackle, an effective tackle, win the ball and win it well. And, you know, when I say win it well, I mean, let Leicester know that if they were going to win the ball, you know, they were going to know they'd been in a tackle. And it's not being dirty, it's just going in hard and playing the game hard. We didn't play the game hard yesterday.
No, I mean, the Leicester midfield, sort of, there was no pressure on them at all at any point in the game.
No.
And as you've identified, George, you know, that just gave them the opportunity just to cut through us like butter. So, you then get on to the question about, I think there's a couple of questions that sort of ruminating around. DCL, he obviously recognises that he's got no chance of going to the World Cup, because he wouldn't have put that performance in had he thought so. Given that the World Cup squad is going to be announced, is it tomorrow, Monday or Tuesday?
No, no, not interested. But there's no way he should be going with the England squad on current form. It'll be Callum Wilson from Newcastle who'll be number two to Harry Kane, I would suspect.
Yeah,
and on current form, rightly so.
Obviously, different players playing in a different position, but you know. That compared to Madison's view of the game yesterday, and there's a guy who was busting his. I mean, he was allowed the opportunity to do so, but there was a guy that was busting his gut to get on that plane.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was interesting that, okay, maybe DCL's not fully fit, but then the question is, well, why are we playing him if he's not fully fit? Well, we're only playing him. Because he represents, even a half-fit DCL represents the best opportunity for us to score goals. But then, if you've got DCL on the pitch, we go back to the idea of, well, what's the plan, lads? You know, we're playing ostensibly two wingers. Didn't see them get past or round the outside of the Leicester defence very frequently and didn't see many balls into the box neither.
No.
No.
And also, you know, when DCL, you know, on a very rare occasions when he was in the box, you know, there wasn't anybody very close to him in terms of supporting him. So maybe the idea of playing two wingers and DCL, if we're playing 4-3-3, which is sort of what we were playing yesterday, maybe the three has to be one winger, DCL and Morpe, or AN other that plays very close to DCL.
What's the news on DCL's injury? Is he going to make the team on Tuesday? Can they try that on Tuesday?
He's got a scan arranged for tomorrow, so
he won't play Tuesday.
You have to think he's not going to play now until probably Boxing Day, I thought.
I think that's probably best for him, but
yeah.
A nightmare for us. Well, you know, I knew I'd get round to this. I'm heading back towards Andy's plan of trying Michael Keane. Well, I don't see Mope as any kind of threat at all.
Well, not the way that we're playing.
No.
Well, and not the way that we're playing him. But even in a side that plays to his strengths, he still only scores a goal, a Premier League goal, one in every four games. And that's, you know, his historic average. And it goes back to some of the points that we've made before. You know, there's only two teams that have scored less goals than us this season so far. You don't win matches if you don't score goals. How are we going to score? Who's going to score? And, you know, this is like the perennial question that's going to go throughout the whole season. Who are going to score the 40 goals that we probably need to survive in the Premier League this season? And you go through the team, you know, and pretty much yesterday was our best 11. You can argue, I suppose, about whether Gordon should be on the pitch if you're looking to play your best 11. But just go through that team and say, okay, where are 40 goals coming from those 10 outfield players?
Can't see it. I can't see 40. You mean 40 in total or 40 more?
40 in total. I mean, we've scored 11 so far.
We've scored 11 in 14 games.
Yeah.
This is scary.
Yeah.
Shall I ask you a question? Are we looking to the January transfer window already?
I suspect we are, but then we get into the conversation about how much money have we got? Who's going to be available?
Who would want to come?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, if there's a regular goal scorer, getting Everton on your CV at this particular moment in time probably isn't a great idea.
No,
I'm afraid that's true. Also, to say so.
So do we have to look into, you know, down into the Championship or, you know, League One, League Two? Whatever we do, it has to be, we've still got the Bournemouth game, I know, but when we come back after the enforced World Cup break, we have to be doing something very differently, or we have to be preparing to bringing different people into the club, if indeed we can do so. Because to continue in the manner in which we're playing, the style in which we're playing, with the same players, we're not going to get to where we need to get to.
No. It's going to be a very, very, very long, horrible season. And I'm going to keep my belief in Lampard because I think he's a bright bloke. And I think I hope he can learn as much as he needs to learn. But looking at them yesterday, and, you know, we knew what Leicester would do because all Brendan Rodgers teams play like that. And it's lovely to watch. I really enjoy watching Brendan Rodgers teams play football. I'm sorry if that's a heresy to, you know, to some scousers, but it's true. I really like him playing football. I hated him when he was manager of Liverpool, but I like the way I like his principles. And when Everton twigged after about 10 minutes that they better book up, we couldn't actually play fast enough, accurately enough, to move them around to make gaps. And I think Lampard must know that because he played in teams where him and Essien and a few, you know, Drogba and people could do that. Do it very effectively too. And Michael, you know, he knows what's wrong. I don't think he's got the manpower to sort it out this season. This is just a holding season. Another one.
George, just, sorry, can I cut across you? Because I just thought of please. Something, which is, I think, an interesting thought. During the week, Onana was in the local media talking about, you know, his short time so far at Everton. And one of the things he talked about was adding goals to his game in order to become a more effective player. And he said that he studied, or he is studying, videos of Frank Lampard, who scored 170 odd goals as a midfielder. But the interesting thing, and the thought just came to me as you were talking then, because you mentioned Lampard, and you know Lampard having played with all of these great players, being able to pass that on. The interesting thing that Onana said was that Lampard is not the type of character that says, "This is what I did in my career. You know, you've got to learn from me because I've done it, pal." And Onana was almost suggesting that Lampard is like too nice a person, too modest a person, perhaps, to stand there and say, "You have to listen to me because I've already done it."
That ought to be implicit. I mean, you know, all three of us and everybody listening must have worked with people who they had no need to blow their own trumpet. You went, yeah, I've seen your track record. You can really do the gig.
Yeah.
But if people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, or if people aren't doing it well enough, there always comes a time when even the nicest of people has to turn around and say, "I'm telling you to do this for one simple reason, because it's what I did throughout the whole of my career." And if you don't think I'm telling you what to do is correct, then go and look at my record. Go and look at the fact that I scored 170 odd goals, that I've got 14 medals in the trophy cabinet at home. Maybe there needs to be a bit of that.
Well, you know, yesterday, I've told this story before, but it's a big one. It means something to me. Yesterday, they cut us open in seconds. They continued to cut us open. And, you know, I wasn't like Andy at the match, so I haven't got my sort of camera on Lampard, but I'm waiting for, you know, I'm waiting to hear somebody say, "Look at Lampard going mad." For crying out loud, get a grip of them, get into them, get the ball off them, bully them in the same way that Moisey did. And he doesn't seem to have that gear. He is quite, you know, you can't change a man's character. You know, he was never a violent, dirty, I'm having that ball. He wasn't that kind of player. So why we should expect him to be that kind of manager, I don't know. But there are times with this squad when that's what they need. They need somebody on the touchline going, "Well, I texted three Evertonians at halftime yesterday and said, 'What does the manager do?' And one of you wrote back and said, 'Put a rocket up their arses.' That is absolutely correct. That is exactly what should have happened to Everton yesterday. They should, you know, I mean, I don't like the idea of ruling by fear. I don't think it's a good wheeze. And I don't think that's Lampard's bag at all. But I do think he has the right to let it be known that this level, what you're doing now, won't do. Back up, you know, following Leicester around, waiting for them to make a mistake or for their attack to go over the bar or hit the bar or whatever is null. It's just mental. I was screaming at the telly, "Get into them. Get the ball off them. Go and get it." And, you know,
couldn't close them down quick enough, bro.
Why not, Andy?
We couldn't get close to them.
Why not?
Because by the time we thought about closing the guy down, he'd move the ball on already.
Exactly. But, you know, the only way you can press, surely everybody knows this now, you have to press as a unit.
Yeah.
Cruyff taught us that, for crying out loud. It's called total football, and it means that the number two is engaged no matter where the ball is on the pitch, because he's going to stop something happening if something goes wrong. Mm. But Everton play at a much more lackadaisical pace than that, and yesterday was a perfect example of what happens if you play lackadaisically against a team that goes, I bet this lot play lackadaisical. You know, I mean, blowing your own trumpet and things, but I remember saying to you about 4 minutes for the second goal, there's something hideously inevitable about this match. And bonk, there it was. It won't do. And I wonder, you know, if Lampard's got flaws, and I'm sure he has, I have, we all have, one of them is a change of gear, really.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know, you know. You can't have everything, but it's one of the things that, you know, in his very, very brief tenure, and I don't, you know, we'll have to see how his career goes. One of the things that Duncan Ferguson was good at was letting it be known that this was not acceptable. That seems to me to be a reasonable part of any manager's equipment. That, you know, you can... You don't have to get nasty. You don't have to get vicious. But you do have to go, this won't do. Raise the level, please. And not wait till half time to do it either.
Well, there was another Ferguson who occasionally threw air dryers around, didn't there?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, that aspect of
I think you're right. You can't rule by fear. And you'll never motivate purely by fear. That's ridiculous. But there has to be come a point where the nice man, you know, drops that facade and tells it how it is. You know, they're in a locker room. You know, the media aren't there. You know, there's 11 players plus the subs, the manager, and his assistants. You know, I think there has to come a time when even the nicest person, whether that's Frank Lampard, whether it was Carlo Ancelotti, whoever, you know, actually says enough's enough. And I'm sorry, guys, but I'm going to give it your blunt. Without saying he's sorry, just give it them blunt. Let them know that they're underperforming and it's not acceptable. You know, there's 40,000 people out there who've paid good money to come in here and watch this tripe. And that's exactly what you're serving up. Tripe, for God's sake, go out there and make a tackle. You know, win a ball. Give them something to get enthused about. And, you know, there was nothing yesterday. It was absolutely toothless yesterday.
Is it possible, and I'm just theorising, is it possible that Frank Lampard is too much of a player as against being a manager, if you understand what I'm saying, that he's thinking as a player, as against thinking as a manager. Sort of, this is not having a go at Frank Lampard session. Again, I thought it was interesting that the piece that was both in the programme and on social media yesterday about Lampard talking about, you know, how much he loves Everton and how much he sort of really enjoys being in the city. He doesn't miss London and all of that. I was thinking to myself, and this is actually before the game, all of this is very nice, all well and good. And it's great for him that he's so comfortable where he is and he loves Everton, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, this is not what I want to hear. I want to hear how we're going to win the next game, how at the end of this season we're going to be competing for European football, how we're, you know, we've got a cup game coming up, which means there might be a day out at Wembley for the fans. Am I being totally unfair in saying that? If you think I am, please say so, because some people will think I am being unfair.
I don't think so, Paul. I mean, I saw those comments and I thought, you know, it was good PR and he said the right things that will appeal to many, many people, you know. But ultimately, yeah, We want the team to win. We want them to win. We want them to play well. We want them to entertain, but we want them to win. And that should be his sole focus at the moment. And whether he chooses to tell us exactly how he's going to attempt to get them to win every game is up to him. But, I mean, you've just mentioned that cup game on Tuesday. I mean, we've got Bournemouth twice now before the World Cup break. Bournemouth, who can't seem to defend the lead at the moment. I mean, they've coughed up two-goal leads in the last two games. Well,
need to worry about us. We won't score two goals.
Well, that's the point. That's the, you know. I mean, unfortunately, the big problem at the minute is everyone fears falling behind. We fall behind, you know. At best, we're looking at a draw because we can't score more than two goals in a game. All right, we've got three against Palace, but that was beginning to look like an aberration rather than the start of a trend. These two games against Bournemouth, dare I suggest it, might become critical for him. We've got to get something from both of them. We really have. I don't think we can. I don't think it's being over reactionary to say that there will be pressure on him now. I mean, yeah. I got a couple of messages last night saying that, you know, Lampard's not the man for the job. He's out of his depth or whatever. He's a fraud. And I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think unfortunately, with the hierarchy we've got, he probably is under pressure because the man at the very, very top, we know, has got a hair trigger and is liable to make a snap decision. So I hope that Frank Lampard can turn things around and that he can get them to have more self-belief and play as he suggested he wanted them to play, like we did against Palace, with energy and purpose and commitment.
Andy,
if he can, great. But unfortunately, I found myself thinking last night, with the exception of one or two, he's dealing largely with a Championship squad playing in the Premier League.
Andy, before we touch on that point, just go back to something you said there. In terms of, like, you know, Mascheri being trigger happy and everything else.
Yeah.
Do you, well, let me ask the question. Do you think that Mascheri has, and I know he's the owner of the club, do you think he has that degree of influence over football matters at this particular moment in time?
To be honest, Paul, I haven't got a clue. I haven't got a clue because we've heard nothing from the man for far too long. We don't know. I mean, he hasn't been to a game since Adam was a lad, or not that we're aware of.
Well, Watford last year when we lost 5-2.
So if that's the last game he was physically attending, you know, you'd immediately think, hang on, how interested he is in Everton Football Club. I don't know what his level of control is, but in the past he's shown that he's got a hair trigger when it comes to managers. The problem I have, or the problem I was coming to, is there are people out there, you know, you've only got to go on social media today and there are people calling for Lampard to go and what have you. Who on earth would replace him? I'm not saying this is a reason why they've got to stick with Frank Lampard. I hope they do stick with Lampard because I think he can turn it round. I'm not quite sure how he's going to turn it down, but I think he's got some ideas on how he can turn things around. But if he were to be dispensed with, who on earth are they going to bring in? Who on earth is going to take the job?
Andy, I'm asking loads of questions, and we've asked George this question actually. Are we not in a position where perhaps because of Lampard's very appealing personality and the way he presents himself and represents himself, are we not sort of being blinded by that sort of level of attractiveness, him as a person? If he was a less attractive personality, would we be giving him the same degree of
Allardyce?
Pardon?
Are you thinking of Allardyce?
Well, yeah. Let's take Allardyce for example, or Ronald Koeman, for example. People who aren't naturally, people that you warm to, would we be giving him the same degree of latitude now?
Probably not because we're all human beings.
Yeah.
And I think your point about is he too much of a player and not enough of a manager has probably got some legs to it too, because the other part of that article you were talking about Onana was Onana saying, you should see him in training, man. He's better than all of us.
Oh, he missed that bit.
he went on to say that Lampard makes nothing of that. He just, joining in the training and, it looks as though Nikolenko has hugely benefited from Ashley Cole, whatever he's been saying to him, in the same way that. But Gerrard got sacked when Villa lost six matches. We've already now lost six matches. We won three from 14. The circumstances are there for Mascheri to do whatever he likes, as they are always there for him to do whatever he likes. And he's quite right. He's Iraq. He's, he can shoot from the hip. And we all remember the stories that he wanted Lampard sacked after we beat Crystal Palace last year, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So that's well possible.
You see, I think, I was the person that reported on that.
You weren't the only one.
No, Mascheri wanted Lampard gone after the Palace game. But actually, I think at this moment in time, Lampard has got one of the safest jobs in football. And I say that because the club is investing so much in him as a person. And I think this is...
qualify that, Paul.
He's front and centre of everything that the club does in terms of its communications. And it's all, it's all very much about, Lampard gets the club, he gets the city, he gets the fans. It's all about this building, this relationship that we've not had for many, many years with our previous managers, as if there's some value to that. And the value is it makes the fan base feel better about the club, and it makes the fan base feel better about the manager. And it might just take the eye away from actually the performance and actually what's happening on the pitch.
Sorry for interrupting, but I was thinking back to the 60s when Harry Kattrick was manager. Now, I don't think there'd be very many people queuing up to say that Harry Kattrick was the most outgoing person, certainly in the manner that Frank Lampard is at the minute. But Harry Kattrick got results, and I know it was a different time and there was no social media back then, and Twitter wasn't going loopy with every result that went by. But there's a man who's diametrically opposed in his manner to Frank Lampard. Kattrick was very private, didn't have a great truck with the media, etc., etc. But got results, won championships and FA Cups, and did it in a rather low key manner. Would we really be bothered if we had a low key manager, even these days of social media, if we were getting results?
I don't think it's about results, Andy. Just to chip in, a friend of mine interviewed Colin Harvey the other day, and she said that Harvey said, well, Harry Kattrick never spoke to the players, never mind the press. So, I mean, those days are gone, and sad to see them go. It's not whether, it's the level that we're at that bothers me. we're not playing at a consistently at the consistent level that we need to play out to sustain even our hopes of, you know, making mid-table. That's the bit that worries me. And yesterday worried me a lot. I thought he picked the wrong team. I thought he made the wrong substitutions. And I waited for him, as I'm always waiting for him, to unfold his arms and give him some, just give it a bit of, come on.
So who makes those observations? I think they're very, really good observations. Who makes those observations within the club? And who is it that then sits down with Frank Lampard and says, okay, you know, great last season that we escaped relegation. But how's it going so far?
Has to be Thelwell, doesn't it?
Has to be Kevin Thelwell, surely.
Yes, in theory, you're right. But is it? Because the other thing, and you know, we're sort of like just shooting the breeze here, but the other thing is, of course, is that to an extent, Lampard has ingratiated himself to the board, because he always talks about, you know, the great relationship he has with the CEO, the great relationship that he has with the chairman, and on the occasions when he speaks with Mashiri, the relationship he has with Mashiri. And I just wonder whether this is a bit of an issue, in the sense that, you know, he's got a very strong personality, a very pleasant personality, as we've discussed. And is that not possibly getting in the way of him effectively doing his job, or effectively other people pointing out the areas that need improvement? Or indeed, the players' willingness to do what he's asking them to do? Because, interesting, we were talking about Alex Ferguson beforehand. No, but none of the players, and you're right to say that you shouldn't rule by fear, but none of the players would not do what Alex Ferguson had not asked them to do. There's not too many negatives in that statement. You know, the point I'm making that they absolutely did to the letter what he asked them to do, and most players did it to the best of their ability because that's what he demanded. And I just wonder, and again, no evidence, no first-hand evidence to suggest this is right at all. I just wonder whether that an issue at Everton? Are we just a little bit too nice? Are we not possibly not demanding enough of ourselves and of each other? You know, this whole notion that the fan base has to turn up every week, wave flags, blue smoke, to get the team up for a game. Well, yes, we should do that from time to time, and it was really effective towards the end of last season, obviously. But should it be necessary that the team can only perform if that happens? I'm not saying it shouldn't happen. I'm just asking the questions. Are we like reliant on is the club, is the team reliant on all of these like clutches in order to be able to walk properly?
It feels like it.
And then, you know, if that is the case, George, who is it in the club that actually recognises it and says, you know, perhaps this is why we've been getting it wrong for many, many years, because this, you know, the Everton way, has been prevalent for so long?
Well, now you're really into the...
Yeah, I'd like someone to actually define what the Everton way is.
Because,
you know, we know from reporters, and I'm waiting for his Christmas book to come out, that Marcel Brands was shafted by the board. He sent in a report every week and nobody paid any attention to it. And the answer to your question, if you asked the same question 2 years ago, would have been Lampard would have had a meeting with Brands to discuss what the hell, what happened, what, nobody turned up on Saturday. What happened, Frank? What's going on? I don't know anything about Thelwell. I hope he's playing a waiting game. But if the waiting game means that our actual mean level of performance drops, then it's not worth it. The game's not worth the carrot.
In a game where, you know, marginal advantages mean everything, the difference between winners and losers is often just very marginal. You know, is this what's the word I'm looking for?
Amortization.
No,
if it is, I'm going.
No, it's sort of like corporate culture, corporate philosophy. Is that the thing that actually is stopping us from achieving more than we're currently achieving? Because I just get the feeling that, you know, it's almost like nobody can be critical of anybody.
Yeah.
I can't tweet something that says, you know, the club are badly run, the club are losing too much money, the club don't have the financing in place for the stadium, for example, without somebody saying to me, oh, you can't say that because, you know, it's going to affect performance on the pitch.
It's got nothing to do with the performance on the pitch, and well, you know it. You know, and so should the people who are telling you to shut your gob. They should know the two things. Well, they should.
Yeah.
You know, but the culture that we're in at the moment, as opposed to the Harry Kattrick one that Andy cited, is, hey, well, I can shout, and you won't know who it is because I'm called Bubblegum Fred. So, and you know, that's the culture we're in at the moment. You must continue to say what you feel to be true. And, you know, I suspect for anybody who's listening to this who doesn't agree with me, the fact that we get so many people to listen to us probably means you're more right than wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm not questioning who's right and who's wrong. I'm just saying this idea that, you know, everything has to have a positive spin applied to it. You know, we're not a PR company. We're not selling cars. We're not, you know, M&S selling food. We should be a competitive football club that does absolutely everything it can do to win every single game that it plays. And maybe I'm completely off on a tangent here. I just feel, and you know, thinking about it from yesterday, that we're a million miles away from that.
I agree with that entirely.
You know, a cold, focused, absolutely determined to win at all cost type of organization.
No, we're nowhere close to that.
Where hard truths are actually encouraged and they're welcomed, because giving a hard truth might lead to an improvement that gives you that marginal advantage in one game. It makes a difference between no points and 1 point, or 1 points and 3 points. And getting those 3 points might mean that you qualify for Europe.
Excuse me.
I don't know. I think it would be a fascinating discussion to have with the club as to whether they would describe themselves as, you know, hard-nosed, cold even, organisation that wins at all costs. Or indeed, even if they want to be, if they're not. Do we want to be this, like, cuddly organisation that also runs a football club? Or has a football team and has a women's football team and has a youth team and, you know, all of the nice things that we do.
Well, if that were to be the case, Paul, then would we not just be settling for mid-table at best every year, just happy to be part of the scene rather than wanting to be at the top of the tree? We mentioned it the other week, you know, just to enjoy a good cup run. A good cup run means winning the cup, not getting to the quarter final. Whereas at the minute, I think people maybe, you know, there is a feeling, well, if we get to the quarter final, it'll be a good cup run.
A good cup run always ends in defeat.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I mean, you know, but as against going out in the third round at Shrewsbury Town, we'll get to the quarter final and go out against whoever. You know what you've said there was, are we happy just to be, you know, does the club or does sections of the club, are they just happy to be part of the Premier League and rather than be a challenger, rather than be a contender?
The flip side of this argument, if I was going to argue against myself, would be that we've got a very ambitious owner that's put, by my reckoning, over £800 million of his own money he's spent on the club, buying the club, investing in the club. And he's building, you know, what is considered to be a world-class stadium on the banks of the River Mersey. There's your evidence that we are ambitious. There's your evidence that the owner is committed, and you know, we hear it all the time. Again, in the CEO's notes in the programme, praising and thanking the owner for his commitment to the stadium, you know, his financial commitment. So that would be the argument against what I'm arguing. But then, sounds like the title of a Bond movie. Is money just enough? Is just money enough?
But why do they have to keep saying that?
What?
Because there's nothing else to say, Andy. There's nothing else to talk about. And my question.
So we just keep regurgitating the same old program notes. Once a month, there'll be a big thank you to Farhad Moshiri for investing his money in the club. And we'll run it again in January, and again in February, and again in March. Yeah, all the while that, you know, the team might continue to struggle, or might continue to struggle to score goals, enough goals. We mentioned it before. We need, you know, if we're looking to score 40 goals, where are the 40 goals going to come from? What are they doing? What are they going to do to address that? How are they going to go about addressing that to make us more competitive? Instead of just saying, thanks, Farhad, for building us a stadium, you know, I'm a bit lost.
My question would be on the back of yesterday, and I've read a couple of reports and I've read, you know, interviews afterwards. Who's angry?
I'm bloody angry.
Who is coming out loud enough from any man, anywhere in Everton, boot room, ball boy, chairman, to go, no, not good enough. Not good enough. 2-0 Leicester at home. Didn't even give them a game. Outshot. 18 shots on target they had. This is not good enough. Nobody's saying that. And you're right. It's because there's an atmosphere in the world that goes, oh, well, you can't see. You mustn't criticise, because that just upsets everybody. It's bollocks. And so was that performance yesterday. And somebody, and the answer to a question you asked ages ago, should be Kevin Thelwell going, Frank, for crying out loud, what are we going to do? That is the seventh time this season we've been rolled over. Sixth time this season we've been rolled over. Everything that happened against Manchester United, which is the most abject one, I know it's because I grew up in Salford, but it was the most abject one, nothing's changed. Nothing's different. Now, I'm not sure we've actually got the physical people there to do it, but something is wrong with the chemistry. You know, we said ages ago, you've got to come off the pitch knowing that you've done the very best you could. I don't really believe yesterday that was the very best they could do. No. And that,
as a collective, it was well short.
Well, then who's addressing that, Andy?
Well, Lampard has to address it in the first instance, and then, as you rightly said, he needs to, you know, surely he needs to be sitting down, or be being sat down by Kevin Thelwell to say, right, what are we going to do? What we're going to do ahead of Tuesday, to get a result in the Carabao Cup, and then what are we going to do on Saturday to ensure that that isn't just a flash in the pan. Because that's what the Palace result looks like now, to a degree, that it was a flash in the pan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And whilst it was a very enjoyable flash in the pan, you know, we want it. It's that consistency that we lack. We don't. We haven't got any. Well, we're consistently abject. And that's the really disappointing thing, is we have a good result and we can't build. We don't appear to be able to build on it or grow from it.
Yeah.
That's the most frustrating thing for me. You know, how can you play so well one week and then it all go pear-shaped, you know, the following week? It's really disappointing. I mean, I said before...
I also think you're right, that if both these Bournemouth results go wrong, that could be the end of Lampard, given the history of how this board and that owner have reacted in the 6-7 years they've been in charge of our club.
I didn't really want to bring it down as brutal as that, but unfortunately, I think that is possibly the case. You know, if we lose on Tuesday and we're to lose in the cup, losing the league game, I dread to think what could happen, because with the 6-week break, or with the break for the World Cup, there might be people, whether it's Farhad Moshiri or others within the club, who think, well, that's enough time for us to bring in somebody to replace Lampard, heaven forbid. And then brings us back to the situation of who on earth is going to be potty enough to take the job. So I really do hope for Frank Lampard and Everton's sake that whatever they do between now and Tuesday enables us to get a result and move on in the Carabao Cup, and that they then able to continue that, build on it, and go and get the result at Bournemouth again on Saturday. And then we can, you know, then they can go off to Australia and play Celtic and the Western Sydney side and come back, you know, and work in training and be ready for Wolves on Boxing Day. You know, these two games could give them these two games at Bournemouth could give them a whole new look at the break. They can enjoy, you know, they'd be able to enjoy it. You know, the fans would be able to enjoy it as well. Because at the minute, I'm looking forward to the break from football. I really am. It'd be nice if we could have two wins before we go into the break, so we could actually have something really positive to talk about next weekend. You know, progression in the cup and winning away at Bournemouth. Hello?
Just listening, Andy. I was going to ask a grossly unfair question.
Go on then.
If you had to choose a win in the league or a win in the League Cup, which one would you choose at Bournemouth?
The league. Because we can't afford another defeat, I don't think, in the league at this minute in time. We've got to, you know, it rankles with me that Everton as a, in inverted commas, big club, have never won the League Cup in any guise that it's had, whatever name it's had. That still rankles with me. But unfortunately, the need of survival and prolonging our tenure in the Premier League, based on finance, is more important than the Carabao Cup. So if we could only have one positive result, I'd rather us winning the league.
Wouldn't you, Paul?
I'd have to say the league, because I suspect that even if we won in the cup game at Bournemouth, the moment we hit a big club somewhere later in the draw, we'll probably go out of the cup then anyway. So Yeah, it would have to be the league. I think it's slightly unfair question, actually, because obviously I'd like to see us win both. Yeah. And you're right, Andy, it'd be fantastic for us to go into the break with, you know, two wins under our belt.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be, you know, they could relax a little bit. They could go into the break in a more relaxed frame of mind than if the break were to happen right now, having come off a loss at home. But we'll just have to wait and see, won't we? I mean, Tuesday. Looking forward or looking ahead to Tuesday. You know, is he going to make changes? Is he going to give some players a rest? You know, I mean, I guess, you know, the first one that comes to mind is, you know, we've got Ruben Vinagre. You know, is he going to rest Mikalenko and give Vinagre the game at Bournemouth at left back? You would probably think so. I mean, I would think if Mikalenko would probably be miffed if he was to be rested. Probably depends how it's put to him. But, you know, from the basis of using the squad, it would probably make sense to rest him. You maybe if, you know, they've said Godfrey's back in full training, you know, might Godfrey be ready to come in now and give one of Cody or Tarkowski a rest? And Michael Keane again. You know, he's been on the bench all season. You know, might he get a game on Tuesday in the Carabao Cup? Depends how seriously the club are taking the Carabao Cup.
Rest assured that we will beat Bournemouth on Tuesday night, because the last time we won, I couldn't watch the match, and we're rehearsing on Tuesday night, so I won't be able to watch the match. So by the time I get home, we will have won 3-0 probably. Mope hat trick.
Some of these omens, bro.
It's called clutching at bloody straws, Andy.
Oh dear me. I don't know. I mean, you're right, Paul. It'd be nice to win both, and I think it'd be nice for the players, be nice for the fans, be nice for the manager. And God forbid it'd be nice for the hierarchy as well, but
at the same time, though, it shouldn't paper over.
No,
what's gone on beforehand?
That's the problem. I mean, two wins at Bournemouth could be a massive papering over the cracks exercise.
And everything is until we're genuinely competitive.
Yeah.
Gents, should we leave it there?
Well, the crying's about to start. Yeah. I would.
Well, you're peeling onions, bro.
No, it's listening to us three quite rightly saying two wins would be so nice. That's where we're at.
Yeah. Well, let's hope for it.
Of course, we always do. That's the conduit that makes a football family hope.
Yep.
I think the final thing you should say about the Bournemouth game is to acknowledge all of those fans that will go to both games.
Yeah.
I mean, fully, ironically enough, when I came out of the ground yesterday, I saw a guy, one of the guys who's always on, he goes to every game and he's always on the coaches. And he was stood near the box office as I walked past him. And I just thought to myself, he's going to be going to Bournemouth on Tuesday and coming home, getting home at silly o'clock Wednesday morning. And then he's going back there again next Saturday morning. And I thought, you know, I mean, years and years ago, that was me as well, every game home and away. But it just seems that much harder these days. I don't know, maybe it's because of the cost or whatever, but I have nothing but admiration for those guys and gals that go week in, week out and wear the, you know, wear the colours on the sleeve in every way, in every true sense of the words.
Yeah, spot on. I suppose in terms of just balance, given that we've given the club a bit of a bashing, the club are paying for or refunding the cost of the tickets, aren't they, to everybody that goes to both games, or everybody that goes to the games. So, I think they're giving people a credit on their ticket account for whatever the value of the ticket is, 30 quid or whatever. So, to be fair to the club, that's a good thing. Okay, gents, let's leave it there, and then we can pick it up again next Sunday. And
for sure, and then we can preview the trip to Australia.
Well, we won't be talking about the trip to Qatar. I know that.
No. The least said about that, the better.
Indeed. George, Andy, thank you so much. Thank you to everybody for listening. And let's hope a good week for all Blues.
Fingers crossed. Yep.